Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1333. Conversations with Monty. Conversation number 7. This is being recorded on June 30th of the year 2024. And once again, it is my pleasure and my privilege to introduce my new co-host, Monty. And among the many things I find very gratifying about your participation in the program, as someone who has not fathered any children or parented any children, in a sense, my offspring, my progeny, my contribution to our civilization is this work. And it's great to see another generation taking that to heart. Now, one of the things that we're going to be doing in this program is continuing our examination of what I term the sweep of history. In our first 6 programs, we focused largely on Prince Max Eugen von Hohenlohe, a man who wore many hats. He was a very significant in-law of the Habsburgs, married into the Habsburgs in Spain, had tremendous participation in the Czech Republic, and was granted the, privilege is the right word, the office of administering many of the most lucrative contracts for the Škoda Arms Works. He was a general in the SS. He worked to betray Czechoslovakia and maneuver it into Hitler's grasp, working with the alleged dupe, Neville Chamberlain. I suspect he was more than just a dupe. I think he knew what he was doing. We then see him committing treason, von Hohenlohe committing treason, although really helping Alan Dulles with his treason, selling out Roosevelt in negotiations with that Roosevelt had forbidden this in 1943. And then 20 years later, roughly, we see a memo from Lieutenant Colonel Rocha, who was the deputy, Ray Rocha, the deputy assistant to James Jesus, the deputy counterintelligence director, assistant to James Jesus Angleton, and the acknowledged expert on the JFK assassination and the Garrison investigation in the CIA. And he identifies von Hohenlohe as the Nazi who was a focal point, apparently, of Garrison's investigation and had drawn the interest of double agents like Mr. Dupina and Carlos Bringier. We also see him, that is to say, von Hohenlohe, networking with Winston Scott when he was with the OSS, Winston Scott when he was with the SSU in the immediate post-war period, the SSU being kind of a pre-CIA CIA. And then we see von Hohenlohe and also the Los Pecos Nazis working with that very same Winston Scott when he is the CIA station chief in Mexico City. And a large part of what I have termed the painting of Oswald Red, it involved things going on in Mexico City with Oswald and or Oswald doubles. We also took a look at how things going on in Spain have a tremendous resonance in Latin America. So when we see Max Eugen von Hohenlohe, a member of the Habsburg family that had been networking with U.S. intelligence since 2009, since the immediate post-war period, in Mexico City, working with Winston Scott in Mexico, it's not really all that strange. And one of the things that we get told frequently is that, you know, that there are no conspiracies, there are no links between these things. But what that does is that effectively eclipses the profound operational connections. And in the case of von Hohenlohe, he is networking with the SS. He's helping to sell Czechoslovakia out to Hitler, working apparently with Neville Chamberlain. He is working with Škoda. He is in networking with Alan Dulles as a proxy for Walter Schellenberg in charge of overseas intelligence for the SS Intelligence Service, and he goes to work for U.S. intelligence. He is apparently involved with the JFK assassination and a major focal point of Garrison's investigation, according to Ray Rocha, and it was that very same Ray Rocha who opined that Jim Garrison would get a conviction of Clay Shaw if he was allowed to proceed unimpeded, which he was not, because the CIA put together a task force in New Orleans to mess with Jim Garrison. We spoke about that at great length in our long series with the masterful Jim DiEugenio about the 25 one-hour interviews with DiEugenio about his opus, magnum opus, Destiny Betrayed. So with that characteristically long-winded, wordy introduction, Moppy, welcome not only to our airwaves, but some more of the sweep of history. One of the things I have found very frustrating as a longtime researcher of, among other events, the assassination of JFK, one of the things that I have found very challenging, very frustrating, is that there are direct links, very direct links, between the war in Ukraine, where the OUNB successor organizations assumed power in the Maidan coup in 2014, and what is going on, and events that not only come from the end of World War II forward, but in particular the JFK assassination. So with that introduction, more of the sweep of history, more of putting the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle of the contemporary American landscape and recent geopolitics, recently the last three quarters of the century. Let's put some of those pieces of the jigsaw puzzle back together as we once again explore the sweep of history.
Of course, and I appreciate that introduction, and I'm very humbled and happy to be here on the program again. I want to jump right into some of the background of a Cold War officer who may be familiar to some of the listeners of your program, especially those who are concerned with the murder of President Kennedy, a man by the name of Spas Topdivor Rankin, last name spelled R-A-I-K-I-N, Spas Topdivor Rankin, if I may.
Sure. How is his middle name spelled? I've seen the initial, but I've never heard it spelled out. How is that man spelled?
Spelled T-O-D apostrophe O-R apostrophe O-V, Spas Topdivor Rankin.
Aha, uh-huh. Interesting. I don't know what that means, but maybe we'll find out someday. Yeah, he was the guy as the Secretary General of the American Friends of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations who met Lee and Marina when they came back from the Soviet Union after Lee had supposedly committed treason against the United States. And he's not met by the FBI. He's not met, ostensibly at least, by the CIA. He's not prosecuted. Instead, he's met by somebody who represents the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, originally called the Committee of Subjugated Nations when it was put together in 1943 by, drumroll fanfare, Adolf Hitler. Tell us about Mrs. Rankin's baby boy Spas.
All right. Well, but with that introduction on him, I think it would behoove us to go at least to the end of the Second World War and quote some CIA documents concerning his activities in that time period. So I'm going to go ahead and do exactly that.
Sure.
And try to correlate, in one sense, his politics, the politics surrounding the man, and what exactly he represented for the intelligence community. And I'm going to be quoting from a book called A Secret Order, Investigating the High Strangeness and Synchronicity into the Assassination of President Kennedy by the late Hank Abarelli,
who was the author, by the way, of Coup in Dallas and also A Terrible Mistake, both of which are familiar to the audience.
Correct. So I'm going to be quoting from the Kindle edition of the book that I have in front of me. So this would be on page 252. And this is from a chapter in the book called Welcome Back, Mr. Oswald. And this is a subsection of that chapter called Nobody Reveals Rankin Was a CIA Employee.
And by the way, we'll go into the whole history of Rankin, we should think of this sweep of history as networking or overlapping or intersecting with the concatenation surrounding the decades-long operations of Max Eggen von Hohenlohe. Go ahead, Nobby.
Correct, correct. And just for a little clarification on that, it has to be understood that the Mexico City station of which Prince Holonoy is operating out of in this time period, 1962 to roughly about 1966 with the, the events that take place in Southeast Asia with the Vietnam War going into full swing from roughly 1962 to 1966. The anti-Castro Cuban operations are in fact headquartered not out of the JM Wave facility in Miami, run by a future Phoenix program commander Theodore Shackley, but the covert operation aspect of the anti-Castro Cuban operations and the post-Bay of Pigs environment, you know, so read into that, but roughly 1962 to 1966 were actually run out of the Mexico City station, all right? And the officer that was the commander of that in that time period was a man by the name of David Atlee Phillips, who would eventually become the chief of the Western Hemisphere Division of the CIA, and the commander of the coup d'etat against Salvador Allende on 11 September 1973. So that is actually the nerve center of all anti-Castro Cuban operations in 1962-63 time period, Mexico City.
Right, and remember it overlapping the discussions in previous shows that Cuba, Havana, Cuba was the epicenter of a falange in the Americas. So three guesses where they went when Castro took power. Go ahead, Moppy.
Well, of course, as we've laid out in previous programs, Max Egan von Holonoy is a top purchasing agent in Spain for Sotavirks and, of course, a member of Sofindis. So it only makes sense that he ends up working as a propagandist with Mexican Nazis in the Mexico City station at the height of anti-Castro Cuban operations.
Amen.
So with that much said, I'm going to be quoting once again from A Secret Order by Hank Abarelli. Chapter, Welcome Back, Mr. Oswald. Subtext, nobody reveals Rankin was a CIA employee. Quote, neither the FBI nor the U.S. Department of Justice nor any other federal group, including the Warren Commission, made any mention that Spaz Rankin was a contract employee for the CIA. Rankin's covert employment by CIA would remain a closely held secret for decades. According to CIA documents dated 1957, some by CIA security officer Robert Cunningham, who participated in the post-murder cover-up of Dr. Frank Olson's death in New York City, Spaz Rankin was first cleared and approved for hire by the agency 22 August 1957. And I'm going to stop there real quick. Spaz Rankin is a full-fledged CIA employee by 1957, all right? So just let that sink in with the reality that he is the man that meets with Mr. Oswald and Marina when they get off the boat in 1962.
And one point, I want to clarify one point very quickly. When they said that he's a contract agent, doesn't mean that he was murdering people, though he may very well have done just that. But it means that rather than being a lifelong, you know, GS, whatever, with the benefits, et cetera, he signs on for X amount of money to do a particular job. And that could be quite a long-running contract, but that's what that means.
Correct. Thank you. Continuing. W.M. Knott, that's the last name spelled K-N-O-T-T, W.M. Knott of the agency's Personnel Security Division Office of Security issued Rankin's final clearance for CIA employment with Project USJPRS, that's all capital letters, USJPRS, Project USJPRS, in New York City, 13 December 1957. Project USJPRS was just organized as a program within the United States Joint Publication Research Service, whereby mostly unwitting CIA contractors reviewed foreign language, technical, and defense-related publications for the agency. The USJPRS program was created within the United States Department of Commerce, Office of Technical Services in March of 1957 to, quote, provide government agencies with translations of unclassified foreign documents and publications worldwide, end quote. Once again, I'd like to interrupt this and just demonstrate for a moment that Mr. Oswald had just come back from working inside of a factory in Minsk that, according to raw technical accounts that I've shared on the Patreon program, that factory was developing radar, over-the-horizon radar systems for the Soviet anti-missile apparatus. So as Spaz Rankin, being a debriefing officer for Project Yuzhgers, clearly he had the background to develop a very enhanced interrogation, to borrow phraseology, of foreign language, technical, and defense-related publications, all right? So if Mr. Oswald came back with, say, oh, I don't know, micro-dotted or micro-filmed information on his person, it may just be that he fed this information to somebody that was willing and able to accept that kind of technical information. And clearly, Mr. Rankin has been cleared and debriefed for that kind of work. I'll read once again that Project Yuzhgers was run through the U.S. Commerce Department's Office of Technical Services, and their job was to provide government agencies with translations of unclassified foreign documents and publications worldwide. Continuing, quote, this would be the beginning of a somewhat mysterious professional relationship lasting at least 15 years between Rankin and the agency. Here, however, it is important to note that the initial CIA request for clearance for contact personnel listing Spaz Rankin and seven others to become contract employees with the agency specifically stated that all the names on the list will not be made witting of true employer CIA. It would be another 2 years in 1960 before Rankin would be fully aware that he was working for a Central Intelligence Agency. Additionally, an FBI document dated 20 November 1957 designated subject Rankin Spaz T and sent by a courier to CIA reveals the deepest interest in Rankin. The two-page document details Rankin's life, family background, and military activities in Bulgaria, as well as his coming to America in 1954, where he quickly became secretary of the Bulgarian Escapee Program of the Church of World Service in New York City. Shortly after, he became secretary general of the right-wing anti-communist Bulgarian National Council, headquarters in New York City, a position he held when he encountered Oswald in New York. One of Rankin's...
One thing I want to interject very quickly, Marty, for your listeners. Bulgaria, along with Romania, Hungary, Croatia, and Slovakia were actually part of the Axis in World War II. It wasn't just Germany, Italy, and Japan. Also, Sweden and Finland, although nominally neutral, also participated. But Bulgaria was an Axis country, and the Bulgarian National Front was the Bulgarian Fascist Party that ultimately became absorbed into WACL, into the Republican Party, and was inextricably linked with the activities of Mr. Rankin.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Dave, because I'm going to pivot dramatically to a little bit about the background of the BNF before we continue with some of the parapolitical connections between Rankin, the Bulgarian Nationalist Front, and then, of course, the Asian People's Anti-Communist League, and his connections to the Kuomintang and their central leadership. With that much said, I think it ought to be clarified why somebody like Rankin would be connected to an organization like the Asian People's Anti-Communist League. And it's actually rather simple and eloquent, an explanation. And it's this. Eastern Europe is in fact Asia. You know, I know that sounds nonsensical to say out loud, but, that's the simplest explanation that can be given as to why somebody like Spas Rankin, a Bulgarian fascist, would be connected to the Asian People's Anti-Communist League. You know, that's just simply the explanation that I've had to draw from the initial roll call roster of an organization called the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, of which the Bulgarian National Front was a signatory member. Yeah,
and the APACL, the Asian People's Anti-Communist League, was the Asian branch of WACL, centered around primarily Korea under Syngman Rhee, Japan under a whole bunch of people, and also Taiwan or Formosa under Chiang Kai-shek.
Yeah, by 1961, with the murder of Stefan Bandera, who was one of the original commanders of the Ukrainian Auxiliary Police and eventually the organizer of the OUN, the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists. By 1961, the Secretary General of the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations was Yaroslav Stemnevich Stetsko, himself a brutal fascist and a mass murdering psychopath who oversaw Abwehr and Gestapo activities in Eastern Galicia during the Second World War.
And he was actually, you absolutely characterize him accurately. He also was basically the quote head of state unquote of the Nazi collaborationist regime in Ukraine. And he is not only lionized in contemporary Ukraine, but under Volodymyr Vyatrovich, it is a crime to tell the truth about what organizations like the OUNB and people like Yaroslav Stetsko, Roman Shukevich were actually doing during World War II. If you tell the truth about them, you can be face criminal charges. So, yes, absolutely. But Yaroslav Stetsko, the head of the Nazi collaborationist government in Ukraine during World War II.
And by 1962, when Mr. Oswald sets foot back in New York City, he is met by one of their representatives, Spas Rankin, through the Bulgarian Nationalist Front. And as another segue, or perhaps another tentacle of this octopus that we're looking at that Mr. Oswald falls into, I'd like to give a little bit of background of the president of the Bulgarian Nationalist Front, if I may.
Absolutely.
Man by the name of Ivan Dochev, last name spelled D-O-C-H-E-V, Ivan Dmitrievich Dochevich. He was born in Shumen, Bulgaria, as a son of an army colonel. He worked in the civil service of the Bulgarian government between 1926 and 1932. He was actually a student of law at Sofia University, and in 1933, he was the founder of the Union of Young National Legionnaires and officially became the leader of this organization. The group was initially anti-communist and nationalist in nature, but soon came under the influence of Italian fascism and Nazism and added corporatism and anti-Jewish ideals to its platform. By 1934, Dochev went to Nazi Germany with Nikolai Zikyev, who was the Minister of War for Bulgaria during the First World War, and by 1934, a reactionary operative within the Bulgarian Nationalist Front, where they both met with Adolf Hitler and Alfred Rosenberg personally.
Rosenberg, by the way, was in charge of the Ostministerium for Eastern Europe. Another point I want to interject very quickly, it may sound weird to talk about Eastern Europe being Asia, but in an essay by Zbigniew Brzezinski, he referred to Ukraine as the pivot point, and that was seen as control of Ukraine was seen as decisive for not only controlling Europe but also Asia too. So it is as foreign a concept as it might be, it's central to what's going on now. Well, also, Mabi, what is your source for the background on Mr. Dochev?
Oh, this is a book put out. I'm sorry. This is a book put out by Philip Rees, last name spelled R-E-E-S, and the book is called "A Biographical Dictionary of the Extreme Right Since 1980," and that was published in 1990. And this is page 96 of the book. Once again, that book is "Biographical Dictionary of the Extreme Right Since 1980" by Philip Rees.
Oh, maybe that's R-E-E-S.
Correct.
Okay.
Continuing. Dochev was reconciled in Lukov during the Second World War and became one of the main supporters of the pro-Nazi general. Once again, that general would be Nikolai Zhukov, who was the Minister of War of Bulgaria during the First World War. His pro-German stance made him unpopular, however, especially as the war neared its end. As a result, he joined with Alexander Zarkanov, last name spelled T-S-A-N-K-O-V, who was a Bulgarian fascist politician and one of the leaders of the anti-Comintern in Bulgaria during the Second World War. He would eventually flee to Argentina when he would die there in 1959, being a very close friend of Juan Perón.
The anti-Comintern, again, was an anti-communist alliance between Japan, Germany, and Italy. And that stance won over a lot of people in the West who might not have otherwise aligned themselves with fascism. Go ahead, Marty.
Right. And it should be noted that the anti-Comintern had, by 1944, had at least 35 countries, including Chiang Kai-shek's Kuomintang, were official signatories of the anti-Comintern while we were supporting Chiang Kai-shek. Yeah, so on that note, continuing, as a result, Ivan Dochev joined with Alexander Zarkov in accepting German-sponsored exile in Vienna in 1944, where he served at the war as a Gestapo liaison officer in Vienna, rounding up Jews. So Dochev, let's backpedal a little bit, as the commander of the Bulgarian Nationalist Front, of whom Spas Rankin is the secretary general of in 1962 when he meets with Lee Harvey Oswald, is serving under the command of Ivan Dochev, who from 1944 to the end of the Second World War was the top Gestapo operative rounding up Jews in the city of Vienna, sending them to concentration camps.
Well, that certainly would qualify him for participation in a lot of institutions that should have otherwise rejected him. And ultimately, the Bulgarian National Front became a key element of the Republican Party's Ethnic Heritage Outreach Council. Yeah, we just had Monty drop out for a while. Go ahead, Monty. So talk about Mr. Dochev. And he was the other general who was working right underneath him, working as a top Gestapo agent in Vienna, rounding up Jews in 1944.
Correct. On that note, he fled into exile, where he continued his political activism in Heidelberg, where he was awarded a doctorate in 1948 at the University of Heidelberg for his thesis on the post-World War II Bulgarian economy, where he later, his thesis was in fact used by the ECA, which was the Economic Administration Cooperation Administration that was set up under W. Averill Harriman to administer the Marshall Plan. So Ivan Dochev is, in fact, an economic theorist working for the Marshall Plan after the Second World War. And by 1951, he moves to New York City, ultimately through Canada, and he becomes the Bulgarian national president in New York City of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, of which is pro-Nazi, Gestapo-run Bulgarian National Front was affiliated.
Fascinating.
So, on that pivot point, and I know you mentioned this a few moments ago, through his position in New York City, by 19, I believe 19, let me see if I can get a direct quote on this. from a book by called Old Nazis and New Right in the Republican Party by Russ Ballant. This is on page 41, talking about what exactly happened to the Bulgarian Nationalist Front in New York. It says right here that the BNF was associated with the Republican Heritage Groups Council, a formalized development of the ethnic division of the Republican Party. The Bulgarian National Committee, a conservative offshoot emigre group of the Bulgarian Nationalist Front, was warned against following the BNF to be involved in this group, denouncing them as fascist, although Richard Nixon in 1968 did not move against them, and the BNF's then president, Rady Slakoff, who served as director of the council, himself a veteran of the Waffen-SS on the Eastern Front. So this is the reality of the Bulgarian Nationalist Front organization that Spas Rankin is a member of. Not only is it the eyes and ears of the Gestapo in Vienna on the Romanian border during the Second World War, rounding up thousands of Jews to be sent into the concentration camp, but by 1969, it becomes Richard Nixon's eyes and ears of his Republican Heritage Groups Council in New York City.
They're fascinating. By the way, we should remember, too, now that Abel Harriman, although a Democrat, was one of those people who was instrumental not only in the funding of fascism prior to World War II, handling a lot of the Brown Brothers. Harriman was inextricably linked with the transatlantic financial and industrial axis that basically armed fascism for World War II in Europe. But he also, by the way, Joe Biden was a protege of Avril Harriman as well. So a little bipartisan finger-pointing there.
Right. So on that note, I'm going to pivot once again back to a secret order by Hank Abbarelli, continuing on page 252. Let's see if I can pull it up here. Okay, quote. And I'll just read the previous paragraph once again. Additionally, FBI document dated November 1957 designated subject Rankin Spas T and sent by courier to CIA reveals a deeper interest in Rankin. The two-page paragraph document details Rankin's life, family background, military activities in Bulgaria, as well as his coming to America in 1954, where he quickly became secretary of the Bulgarian Escapee Program of the Church World Service in New York City. Once again, I would note, given the background of the Bulgarian Nationalist Front, it would not surprise me if this organization was formerly a Nazi rat line that was set up and eventually legitimized through the CIA. Continuing, shortly after he became Secretary General of the right-wing anti-communist Bulgarian National Council, headquarters in New York City, a position he held when he encountered Oswald in New York. One of Rankin's first acts in this position, revealed by Rankin's CIA 201 file, was to send a letter on 19 September 1962 to CIA Director John McCone. The letter invited the DCI to come to New York City to take part in a memorial event honoring the 15th anniversary of the tragic death of Nikola Patkov, the leader of the Bulgarian parliamentary opposition to the communist regime in Sofia. Rankin's letter to CIA Director McCone also states, quote, "The Bulgarian National Council is greatly honored to announce the official proclamation issued by Governor Nelson A. Rockefeller declaring 23 September 1962 the Nikola Petrov Day. We'll read at the celebration," end quote. Rankin's misspelled McCone's name in the letter, McCone. Editorial note from Hank Abbarelli. Continuing. Rankin also set a steady stream of Rankin also sent a steady stream of ingratiating letters to the House Un-American Activities Committee, frequently forwarding carbon copies to the White House, the U.S. State Department, and the CIA. At the same time, according to a number of declassified secret CIA personnel 201 assignment forms, Rankin was sponsoring a long line of, quote, Bulgarian refugees for work assignments within the CIA, end quote. So clearly, backpedaling a little bit, Rankin has some very powerful friends in 1962. The director of the CIA, John McCone, the governor of the state of New York, Nelson Rockefeller, and all of the ranking members of the House Un-American Activities Committee, Dave. I mean, it's just incredible who he is liaisoning with and the fact that this is the man that debriefs Mr. Oswald when he gets off the boat in 1962.
Sparsbacon was the antithesis of a lone nut. He wasn't a nut, and he most assuredly wasn't alone.
Right. Continuing with A Secret Order by Hank Abarelli. Quote, at least 100 pages of CIA documents concerning Spaz Rankin remain classified. I should note that this book was published in 2013, so, and that has not changed. It is now 2024 as of the time of this recording, and those documents are still classified. Spaz Rankin, 100 pages of CIA documents. Continuing. However, a declassified CIA confidential notice of security action memoranda reveals that in January of 1967, 4 years after the JFK assassination, Spaz Rankin applied for full-time employment with the CIA. Following at least one agency polygraph session, Rankin was cleared by the CIA's Office of Security for several possibly sensitive positions in Washington, D.C. and Langley, Virginia at, quote, headquarters building, end quote, at building number 213 of the Naval Weapons Plant as a GSI employee of the headquarters building and as a, quote, CNP telephone employee in the agency's Langley headquarters and as an independent contractor of USJPHS, end quote. So, once again, backpedaling a little bit, let's put that into perspective, Dave. Rankin, by January of 1967, 4 years after the murder of President Kennedy, is a special employee of the Office of Naval Intelligence's Naval Weapons Plant in Virginia and an electronic warfare officer serving in the CIA's headquarters in Langley, Virginia.
One more pun for emphasis.
Of course. By 1967, January of 1967, Spaz Rankin, the man that meets with Mr. Oswald and debriefs him when he comes back from the Soviet Union in New York City in 1962. By 1967, Spaz Rankin is an Office of Naval Intelligence employee at their Naval Weapons Plant in Virginia, and he's an electronic warfare officer serving within the headquarters of the CIA in Langley.
A man with about as many significant connections as one could think of off the top of one's head. And again, this is the guy who meets Lee and Marina upon their return from the Soviet Union, and Lee ostensibly had committed treason, and yet No charges, and then he goes to work for Jagger's Child Stovall, that does map work for the Army, and Riley Coffee Company, managed by, owned by a guy who was a major financier of the anti-Castro Cuban effort, and so forth.
Correct. It should also be noted, that in terms of industrial security and, CIA covert actions, that, the man that actually runs the day-to-day operations of the Wiley Coffee Company when Lee Harvey Oswald is working there in 1962-63 time period is William I. Mahanahan, okay? And he was, during the Guatemalan coup d'etat in 1954, codename Operation PB Success, William Mahanahan was the chief of security for the United Fruit Company.
And the United Fruit inextricably linked, not coterminous, but inextricably linked with the CIA, Alan Bellis being one of those many significant links. Go ahead, Marty.
And of course, David Atlee Phillips was the chief of psychological warfare during the Guatemalan coup and a, what can I say, close liaison officer to William Mahanahan, who once again, I will stress, is running the day-to-day operations of the Riley Coffee Company when Lee Harvey Oswald is working there in 1962-63 time period. So just let that sit in, Dave, for when we reference the Mexico City Station and what they're doing with an organization called the DRE. But we'll get to that in a minute.
This whole circle of associations with Mr. Mahanahan, that would indeed be an example of what Billie Holiday called strange fruit in a hit song she had about lynching.
Right. So continuing on that note, I'm going to read a few more paragraphs from a secret order. This is a subtext, how Spaz Rankin came to the United States. So reading once again from Hank Abarelli's book, A Secret Order. Quote, according to several CIA documents generated in 1957, while Spaz Rankin was being considered for additional assignments with the CIA, Rankin and two other Bulgarians on 6 May 1951 deserted their Tutorklavs, that's their Bulgarian Labor Corps military unit, and made their way to Plotiv, a city in Bulgaria, and then they exfiltrated into Greece. A November 1957 FBI report in response to the CIA's request to the Bureau for any information it had on Rankin reads, quote, the reason for Rankin's desertion was to join an alleged illegal group working in the mountains south of Plotiv. Unable to make contact with the group, Rankin and his two fellow deserters wandered around the mountains obtaining provisions from relatives and friends. Unable to hold out any longer, they entered Greece on 19 June 1951. The report elaborates on Rankin's desertion. Quote, subject Rankin, desire to desert was to join to fight against communism in the name of the Bulgarian Orthodox Church. When he found it would be impossible to do so inside of Bulgaria, he decided to escape to Greece and join such a church group there, if it existed. If none existed, his desire to form a militant illegal church to fight communism in Bulgaria would be spawned in Greece. In 1957 FBI report cites an earlier FBI report dated 21 November 1956 concerning Vladimir Tykov Metkarski, last name spelled M-E-T-C-H-K-R-S-K-I, Metkarski, who identified as, quote, a Bulgarian political exile who became a disgruntled in the United States and sought to return to Turkey, end quote. The FBI report states, quote, a Mr. Rankin, marginal note, spells his name Spaz Rankin, R-A-Y-K-I-N, was sent to Chicago by the World Council of Churches in New York to assist Mr. Metkarski, end quote. It should be noted, Dave, that to this day, and to your listening audience, and just let this sink in, the modern-day Bulgarian Nationalist Front still exists, and it's based in Chicago, Illinois.
And a lot of those Eastern European emigre intelligence and fascist-connected groups do have major connections and intersections in Chicago. Go ahead, Monty.
Right. Just to put that in the historical perspective, when the Nye Committee debriefed General Butler about his purported business plot, the military coup to take over the United States in 1933 and 1934, General Butler actually debriefed the Nye Committee to the effect that the headquarters of the business plot coup was at the Republican National Convention in Chicago, Illinois. So just put that into some historical perspective about the modern day Bulgarian Nationalist Front being based in Chicago, Illinois to this very day.
Now, when you talk about the coup, you mean the 1934 coup?
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
So, continuing with A Secret Order. The same FBI report also cites a 12 September 1951 CIA report concerning the Bulgarian Orthodox Church prepared from information furnished by, drumroll please, that's my own editorial, Spaz Rankin, who considers himself an ordained priest in the Bulgarian Church. Quote, In preparing the information, Rankin used the nom de plume Prisver Kosma, last names Kosma. The FBI field station comments that Spaz Rankin, using the name Kosma, was brought to Athens from Slolinka, a major port in Greece, 19 July 1951, to work for the CIA's LKB GASP-10 organization. Emphasis added, the letters CIA LKB GASP-10. That is all capital letters GASP-10. Handwritten, presumably by a CIA officer or a government official who, on the document copy provided to the author. That's Hank Abarelli's editorial. GASP and GASP-8, according to MKUltra documents, were elite ultra-secret CIA interrogations teams. So, with that said, I'd like to reflect upon that for a moment to your listening audience, Dave.
One thing I want to interject very quickly, interrogation is a word that is a wonderful intelligence community euphemism. It not only often refers to torture, particularly the term enhanced interrogation, but overlaps significantly with mind control as well. And a major element of the genesis of the intelligence community's mind control programs was for interrogating people.
Correct. And according to this document, once again, dated 19 July 1951, a CIA internal memoranda, backdated 12 September 1951, clearly states that Spaz Rankin, as early as 19 July 1951, was a CIA torture interrogator for their MKUltra interrogation teams in Athens, Greece.
You know, one of the things about Rankin, and it, as I've said in the past, when you are downloading your magnificent research for us, I consider myself to be a student of what you're doing. And while I've long taken it as axiomatic that Spaz Rankin of the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations was inextricably linked with the intelligence community, he was, in fact, not only working for CIA, but a cliche that I use, by now a cliche for the listeners, more connections than a switchboard. I think it might almost, I say almost, be easier to name the things that Spaz Rankin wasn't involved with.
Well, there's one way to look at it, Dave, and absolutely. He has what can I say? You know, connected to the Bulgarian National Front, Nazi Party, you know, Greek torture interrogators at the height of the Greek Civil War, and a full-fledged MKUltra officer, electronic warfare officer at Langley, and an Office of Naval Intelligence economic warfare officer. This is the man that meets with Mr. Oswald in 1962 when he gets off the boat in the United States, and seemingly nobody flexes, as you pointed out earlier, against Mr. Oswald. He's not imprisoned or himself in turn tortured and interrogated by, one of the CIA's top torture and interrogators in Athens, Greece, at the height of the damn Greek Civil War, for Pete's sake. I mean, this is just insanity. But this is the lemon that the American public has been forced to swallow for at least six decades on now. So,
by the way, with regard to the Greek Civil War, to make a very long story very short, the Western Allies actually betrayed the Greek partisans, the Greek resistance. They basically drove the Nazis for all practical purposes out of Greece at great cost to themselves. Something like British lost a total of 4 men, quote, retaking Greece, unquote, from the Axis. And what the Western Allies, led by Britain, but ultimately with the U.S. doing most of the heavy lifting, they simply turned on the Greek guerrillas who had basically driven the Nazis out at great cost to themselves. That is covered at some length in AFA program number 1. Go ahead, Marty.
Thank you. On that note, I'd like to pivot rather dramatically to an interview that was conducted with the former chief of special operations for the Joint Chiefs of Staff in 1962. So this is the exact same time period that Mr. Oswald meets with MK Ultra torture and interrogator Mr. Rankin. And this is an interview conducted with Air Force Colonel Prouty, with Christopher Stimson. And there are a few annotations that I will admit are my own, but in turn, this will give some idea of where the CIA was running their activities in terms of hiring mechanics and hitmen for their activities in Eastern Europe under something called Operation Bloodstone. All right.
Okay. Now, is this interview in the landmark opus by Christopher Stimson called Blowback?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. So this the source for what Monty is about to present is an interview by Christopher Stimson interviewing L. Fletcher Prouty in the book Blowback. Go ahead, Monty.
So, quote, and this is from Prouty once again from the book Blowback. And this is on page hardback edition of this book. This is on page 231. Quote, and this is Prouty speaking to Christopher Stimson on where exactly and who exactly they were tapping for covert activities in terms of their ratline ops and their assassination operations. According to Fletcher Prouty, who was responsible for the U.S. Air Force air support for CIA missions overseas, a series of assassinations was undertaken by, quote, and this is Prouty speaking, the best commercial hitmen you ever heard of, known as mechanics. They were primarily Ukrainians, mainly Eastern Europeans, some Scotsmen, hired out of Athens, Greece. I do not know how the Scotsmen got there, but there they were, end quote. Prouty asserts that teams of mechanics were used in cross-border infiltration operations to rescue agents in the murders of alleged Soviet agents. During 1947, a joint British-U.S. emigre espionage network infiltrated with agents organized by Soviet and Czech intelligence was liquidated as a part of Operation Rusty. To mask the deaths, the killings were attributed to fractional violence amongst rival Ukrainian groups, end quote. Now, Prouty, by his own admission, Colonel Prouty, the former chief of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Special Operations Community in 1962, ostensibly overseeing all covert action supporting the CIA through the Department of Defense, Colonel Prouty literally identifies Athens, Greece as his headquarters for hiring assassins for Eastern European operations against the Soviets as early as 1947.
And Ukrainians figure prominently in that coterie of assassins.
Right. And I should note that the Operation Rusty that he's referencing, that's the original United States Army code name for what eventually would be called the Galen Organization. So that's what he's referencing. The Galen Organization. So reading it through, a different language, just to clarify that for your listening audience, the Galen Organization's initial assassination teams were set up in Athens, Greece in 1947.
Yep. And of course, the Galen Organization, well known to veteran listeners, it was the Nazi Eastern Front Intelligence Organization, became eventually the most important of the Nazi intelligence organizations, and ultimately it morphed into the BND, the German Federal Intelligence Service, which it is to this day. And in an essay by Carl Oglesby in Covert Action Information Bulletin number 35, Colonel William Corson, a Marine Corps colonel who resigned his commission in Vietnam as a protest against U.S. policy in Vietnam, he became the advisor of the Church Committee, the author of the book The Armies of Ignorance, and he specifically characterized the Galen Organization, which was the U.S.'s eyes and ears on the former Soviet Union in Eastern Europe as, quote, a front for Odessa Nazis, unquote. He said it was a quote, an exceptionally well-organized diversion. So basically our eyes and ears on that part of the world during the Cold War is a front for the Odessa, the post-World War II SS underground, which is, again, as we contemplate how we've gotten to the position we're in, that's how we got there.
And of course, backpedaling to Hank Abbarelli's book, A Secret Order, where is Spaz Rankin acting as a torture interrogator for the MKUltra program in 1951? Athens, Greece, nerve center of the Galen organization's recruiting efforts for their assassination programs.
Okay, my mother, we're into the last couple of minutes of this program. So find a good stopping place, and I'll wrap the show up, and we'll continue with 1334 and this altogether and characteristically illuminating discussion. So you, when they talk about the Illuminati, they're talking about you, Monty.
Absolutely, absolutely. And let's hope that we're illuminating other men in that sense to move forward with this research. I think we should stop on that note and then pivot dramatically in the next program to Spaz Rankin and the Mexico City station operations.
Very good. Let's do that. I want to remind listeners of several things. First of all, links at the top of each written for the record description and each food for thought post, one of which will enable you to obtain to subscribe to the podcast for the record that the sister station WFMU is doing. And another will enable you to get the 32-gigabyte flash drive with all of my work through for the record 1310, or plus the mini library of old anti-fascist books. The essay that I alluded to earlier by Carl Oglesby is on there. And that I think is an indispensable source for people who want to survive and have their families survive. Also, let me give an emphatic plug for the brilliant research being done by Tara Fractal, our brilliant contributing editor, who moves mountains with regularity with his comments on the SpitfireList.com website. So we will continue with this discussion in our next program. This, however, concludes For the Record program number 1333, Conversations with Monty. This is conversation number 7. This is being recorded on June 30th of the year 2024. For Monty, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.